Yeah, people must have not noticed the time change, or the first week was so disastrous. But anyway, two notices before we start. Homework one is on the web. The class has a website, as you know. If you go here and click, you'll find homework one. Second, I remind you that all classes are at 10 a.m., and Wednesday classes are in Huron. Okay, so, and okay, now as for math, so we're back to Monday's classes, and Monday classes are like plain, not theory. And we want to come to the point where we formulate a theorem which we will prove on Wednesdays. Okay? And then motivate the proof on Fridays. But I'm still doing plain, not theory, and I remind you that we defined this coloring invariant. So, first of all, we discussed the fact that every knot has a projection, namely a diagram, right? And a knot diagram is something like, well, just like what you would imagine. And then we talked about knot colorings, and knot colorings have to do with coloring each of the arcs of a diagram. Here there are three arcs with red, green, or blue. And one of the homework problems is to show that the set of all such colorings, and then counting how many such colorings there are. And one of the homework problems is to say that this count is always a power of 3. Now, since there are only, you know, if you're talking about a 10 crossing knot, there are only about 10 powers of 3 between 1 and the maximal possible number of coloring, which is 3 to the number of the arcs. So it follows the invariant can get at most 10 different values, and in fact it gets a lot less, like 2 or 3 different values, if you restrict your attention to knots with up to 10 crossings. So the moral is that it's an extremely weak invariant. There are about 250 knots with up to 10 crossings. So it's an extremely weak invariant, and we'd better look for something else. Okay? Now, better things are around, and I want to spend some time talking about the Jones polynomial today, the Kaufman bracket and the Jones polynomial today. This is not yet in the direction of the theorem that at the end we will be after. On the other hand, the invariants that the theorem, this fundamental theorem we're after, will be constructing will be much stronger than the Jones polynomial, and the Jones polynomial will be some sort of one of the warm-up cases, one of the, it will be nice to deduce it from the bigger invariant. Okay? So, and finally, the Jones polynomial and the Kaufman bracket are so famous and so easy that we should say something about them. So, Kaufman's idea, originally Jones discovered the Jones polynomial by talking about operator algebras and doing various complicated computations, or not so complicated perhaps, and then Kaufman found an extremely simple way to derive the Jones polynomial, and I'm going to follow it, and it's called the Kaufman bracket. So the Kaufman bracket is denoted by, well, a bracket symbol placed around a knot diagram, and it is valued, well, actually I'm not going to tell you where it's valued yet. We'll find in a minute, but it appears to be valued in functions of two variables, and the two variables are called A and D, but later we will see that I'm a bit lying here. Okay? So temporarily this is it. And it is defined by two axioms. One axiom is that if you have a big knot diagram, and within it, oh, sorry, I should have said, it is a functional, not yet even an invariant, but a functional over unoriented not diagrams. So in this not diagram, I didn't bother to specify the orientation of the curve, and this is fine because the Kaufman bracket is defined on unoriented not diagrams. Anyway, it is defined by two axioms. First of all, if you see a crossing in the diagram, the bracket of the crossing, let me say in a minute what it means, but the bracket of the crossing is equal to A times the bracket of its zero smoothing. This is the so-called zero smoothing, plus B, oops, sorry, I forgot, it's function of three variables, A, B, and D, plus B times the bracket of its so-called one smoothing. Okay? Now, let me explain. So, here, and in fact elsewhere in knot theory, whenever we write a part of a knot, or whenever we have an equation which involves writing a part of the knot several times, so a part of a knot several times, so a part of a knot is appearing here, another part is appearing here, another part is appearing here, what we really mean is that this equation stands for a huge family of equations which are obtained by completing this part to a complete knot in any possible way. So take this knot part and complete it to a knot by continuing the arcs in any possible way, and then do the same in all other knot parts that appear in the equation, using the same completion. Okay? So again, this is really a huge family of equations, one for each potential completion of this part, and for each such completion, you complete this, you complete this, you complete that, you get three different knots, and then the relation here is that the bracket of the first is equal to A times the bracket of the second plus B times the bracket of the third. Okay, so that was one comment. Second comment, I just realized that I already here lied to you a little bit. You see, if a knot has a crossing and you replace it by this configuration, which is called a smoothing, typically it will become a link diagram. It will change the connectivity. Maybe the simplest example, take this knot diagram. If you replace this by that, it will become a two-component thing, and now it's a link. Okay? So I should have said that it's an invariant of unoriented link diagrams. Okay? Next, so how do you tell a zero smoothing from a one smoothing? So, you know, one way to say it is to say, well, the picture defines it. Okay? I don't have a good mnemonic, a good thumb rule for remembering which is which. The way I remember it is as follows. I think of this as an interchange. Okay, so we have two highways crossing each other, and then I wanted it to be the same as here, and then the zero smoothing is if you start at level zero and you turn to the right, you get the zero smoothing. And in fact, over here, if you come into the interchange at level zero and you turn to the right, you get the other branch of the zero smoothing. On the other hand, if you start at level 1 and turn to the right, so this is level 1 of the interchange, you turn to the right, as you normally do in you know, well, the easier way of turning at least, then you get the 1 smoothing. I don't know, if you have a better way of remembering it, go for it, I don't care. Okay, so that's relation number 1. And relation number 2 is the following. So if you have a circle inside a knot diagram anywhere, and then, well, or a link diagram, and then the rest of the diagram I'll call D, then the value of the bracket of the circle plus D is equal to D times the value of the bracket of the remaining diagram. So basically, a circle is worth a factor of a D. Okay? So let me show you an example how to compute this thing. Okay? So maybe I'll, for a change, I'll use this blackboard because I want to keep it. So let's compute the invariant of the trefoil, or the so far invariant of the trefoil. Okay? So, in principle, we have to replace each crossing by either a 0 smoothing or a 1 smoothing. There is a total of 8 ways to do it. Once we do it, we get various coefficients, A's and B's, and a diagram in which there are no more crossings. Since there are no more crossings, it has only circles in it, and then each circle is worth a factor of D. Okay? So we will get overall, yes?
Excuse me, what if capital D is empty?
I will add it in a minute, okay? Sorry, it's sort of in construction definition, okay? You know what, let's add it now. I should have added it at the start. Maybe I should have just written the invariant of the empty diagram is 1, okay? So anyway, so at the end I will get a polynomial in A, B, and D, which has 8 terms. It's a bit of a mess to write it in full, but it's actually less complicated than it seems, because the trefoil has a threefold symmetry, right? If you rotate it 120 degrees, you come back to where you start. So many of the smoothings come out to be the same. So let's write it in full. So, okay, one possibility is to take the zero smoothing of all crossings, right? If I take the zero smoothing of all crossings, I get a factor of A cubed, because there are 3 smoothings and each one gives me a factor of A, so I get A cubed times the bracket of, so let's see, what's the zero smoothing? I go here, I enter at the zeroth level and I turn right. So I will get something like that from this crossing. From that crossing, by symmetry, well, basically this will close into a circle. I will have 3 things like that and they're connected on the outside, so I get a picture like this. Okay? Plus, now, there are 3 possibilities to take the zero smoothing of 2 and the 1 smoothing of 1. And the 3 possibilities are equivalent by a rotation by 120 degrees. So I will simply get 3 times A squared B times what you will get if you flip one of these smoothings. If you flip one of these smoothing, let's flip this one, you'll get a picture that looks like this. I'm a very bad artist, I'm sorry, but you'll get a picture that looks like this. okay? Plus 3 times AB squared times what you get when you flip 2. Let's flip these 2. And if we flip these 2, we get a small circle here, and then a picture like this, I believe. Correct me if I do something wrong. Plus a b cubed times what we get when we flip all 3. If we flip all 3, we get, I think, something like that. So 3 circles that are near tangent in 3 different places. Okay? So this is a cubed times d squared plus 3a squared b, now this has only one cycle, so times 1d, plus 3ab squared d squared plus b cubed d cubed. Okay? Good. So the next question is this an invariant, right? I mean, it's pointless if it's not a not invariant. So let's see if it's an invariant. Well, it turns out that it's best to start with Rademeister 2. So let's see if it is invariant under Rademeister 2. So let's compare the Kaufmann bracket of the left-hand side of Rademeister 2 with that of the right-hand side. Well, on the left-hand side, we get, well, we have something with 2 crossings, so there will be 4 terms. The 4 terms are, so let's see, we have an a squared term, where we take the zero smoothing on both sides. The zero smoothing here, so the zero smoothing here is, well, you turn right, so it will look like this. The zero smoothing up here will be, well, you start at the zeroth level and turn right, so it's this one. So you get that, okay? And I'm dropping the bracket symbol because it's clear, okay? Plus AB times flipping this smoothing. So you'll get a picture like this, plus BA, which is, I suppose, also AB, times flipping this smoothing, which gives you a picture like this, plus b squared times flipping both, which gives you a picture like this. Okay? And now I can collect terms. Well, really, I have here the bracket of this. Well, topologically, this is the same as that. So I have the bracket of this, with a coefficient equal to, so let's see, from here I get a squared. From here I get a times b times d. Right? I can remove this circle. A circle will always be worth a d, so I can remove it, and I'll get this with a factor of d. So plus dab, plus, from here I get a b squared. Now, plus A times B times the bracket of, well, this topologically is simply that. Now, I want it to be equal to the right-hand side of Rademeister 2. The right-hand side of Rademeister 2 is just that. Okay? But the only way this can be equal to that is if A times B is equal to 1, right, because I want this term to match with that, and this thing should be equal to 0. So the moral is AB is equal to 1, and A squared plus DAB plus B squared is equal to 0, and the moral from that is that B is equal to A inverse, and D is equal to, so you see, this becomes a squared plus 1 over a squared. This is simply D, because the A and B cancel. So we get that D is negative A squared, negative 1 over A squared. Okay? So really, it's a function, or functions, or in fact, it is really Laurent polynomial. Laurent is with E, I think, isn't it?
Yes.
Laurent polynomials in A. So what you end up with at the end is just polynomials in A and A inverse. Okay? So this really becomes A cubed times negative A squared negative A to the minus 2 squared plus 3A times A negative A squared negative A to the negative 2 plus so on. Okay? Okay. Now, things are actually not looking good, because if Rademeister 2 got us from 3 variables to 1, Rademeister 3 surely will get us to 0. Okay? But in fact, Rademeister 3 follows from 3, for free. And here's the reason. So let's write a Rademeister 3. Okay? I want to compare this with the thing that you get by sliding the horizontal strand to above the crossing. Okay? But what I can do is, first I can smooth this crossing. Smoothing this crossing, I get... I wrote the wrong type of smooth... sorry. So the zero smoothing of this one is this. So I get A times this plus A inverse times the other smoothing, which looks like this. Okay? But I already have Rademeister 2. Once I fix A and B to satisfy these relations, I can already slide this crossing to the middle, sorry, this strand to the middle, and then up to the top, up below the second half. So this is equal to A times this plus A inverse times, well, this is just topologically equivalent to that. But now I have A times a zero smoothing plus A inverse times a one smoothing, and I can reassemble it to be a crossing. So overall, I get that this is equal to what you get when you reassemble these two to be a crossing, and that will be this, which is the other side of Rademeister 3, so Rademeister 3 is checked. Okay? Well, so let's do Rademeister 1. So let's compute the Kaufman bracket of the left-hand side of Rademeister 1. So notice, by the way, that the strands here are not oriented. Yet, it makes sense to say that this is a positive kink. Okay, it's a little kink in the strand, and it makes sense to say that it's a positive string, kink. And the reason is, no matter how you orient it, if you orient it up, well, both lines will be oriented up at the crossing, and then you can check that this is a positive crossing. And in fact, if you flip the orientation of the strand, well, at the crossing, both sides will flip orientation, so it will still be a positive kink. And in fact, so in fact, there are two Rademeister ones. There are two variants. There is the variant where we use the positive kink and the variant where we use the negative kink. And in fact, we have to check both. So this is the plus kink, and this is the minus kink. Okay, let's compute the Kaufman bracket of the positive kink. Well, we get A times the zero smoothing. The zero smoothing is you turn right at the crossing. So A times this, right? Plus A inverse times that. Okay? Now, a circle is worth negative A, negative A squared, right? So we get A times negative A, negative A squared, negative A to the minus 2. Sorry. So we get this times a single line. And over here, well, this is topologically the same as an unkinked single line. So we get also plus A inverse times the single line. Right? And so now it's arithmetic. A inverse cancels this A inverse. Sorry, A times A to the minus 2 cancels the A inverse. And the other terms is negative A cubed. So we get negative A cubed times this, which is bad news because it's not invariant, EK invariant, under Rademeister 1. How about the other Rademeister 1? Well, you do the same computation, all the A's flip powers, and you get negative A to the negative 3 times the invariant of the single strum. Okay? So this is bad news, but the good news is that there is an easy way to fix it. So what we do, well, okay, when we add a kink, the invariant changes by a fixed multiplicative factor. So what we do is we find another invariant that changes by the opposite fixed multiplicative factor and multiply the two, and the result is genuinely invariant. Okay? So, definition. The Rife of an oriented knot diagram D is W of D, which is the sum over all crossings X in D of the sign of the crossing. So this is very similar to the definition of the linking number, except in the linking number I insisted on looking at crossings between the two different components, and here I just look at all crossings. Okay? Now, what happens to this under Rademeister moves? So this is clearly, or let's go from the bottom, this is clearly invariant under Rademeister 3. Because under Rademeister 3, if you remember, there is a bijection. So if you draw a Rademeister 3, then there is a bijection, there is a correspondence between the crossings before and the crossings after. This crossing becomes that one, each one becomes the sort of opposite one. And the signs are preserved under this correspondence, so the sum of signs is the same sum of signs. Okay? It is also invariant under Rademeister 2. Again, the same computations that we did when we talked about the linking number works here. Basically, we have to compare this with that. there are two crossings here, and they come with opposite signs, so they cancel. And it is not ek invariant under Rademeister 1. So, in fact, W of a positive kink is equal to, well, the kink itself will contribute 1, or this crossing will contribute 1, so this is 1 plus W of what you get when you remove this positive kink. And if you do it with negative kinks, it will be a negative 1 plus that. Okay? So the moral is, I'll call the moral a definition slash theorem. Okay? So the definition part of it is, well, if K is an oriented knot, or in fact, possibly a link, and really when I say an oriented knot, I mean an oriented knot diagram. Okay? I will define J of K to be, okay, let's first take the Kaufman bracket of K and then multiply it by a counter term that has the opposite behavior. So, well, I want it to be that when I add a kink, a factor of negative a to the negative 3 will be added to the will be multiplying the invariant. So I'll just put here negative a to the negative 3 times the rife of the knot k. Okay? So this is almost good. In fact, this is good. In fact, I could continue the statement of the theorem, and it's already correct. If K is an oriented knot link or linked, then this is a knot invariant. Knot or link invariant. Except usually it is normalized a little bit differently. So first of all, notice that no matter which diagram you start with, you will have at the end at least one circle when you compute the Kaufman bracket. So the result here will always be divisible by D. So we seem to have a superfluous factor of D, so let's kill it. So let's divide by D, or alternatively, let's divide by the bracket of the single unknot. Okay? And second, by convention, instead of thinking of this as a function of A, you do the substitution, you replace A by Q to the, I believe, negative 1 over 4 with the conventions that I've chosen. Okay? At this point, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't make any difference. It's just the same result in a different variable. Okay? So now it is a knot or a link invariant, and it's called the Jones polynomial. Okay? So in principle, I could continue this computation and tell you what the Jones polynomial of the trefoil is. Okay? But I would rather tell you how to do it on the computer much more generally. Okay? So let's break from this formal definition for a minute and think about how to do it on a computer. So first of all, I need to tell you how to present knots on computers, on a computer. Well, there are many ways, and my favorite way is the following. Well, first of all, by the way, the reason it is my favorite way is precisely because it makes the computation of the Jones polynomial so simple. There are other ways that are kind of more suitable for other things. Okay? Anyway, we choose a starting point, and we number the edges of this diagram starting from that point. Okay? So this edge is number one. The following one is number two. The next one is number three. The next one here is number four. The next one here is number six. Sorry, five. And the last one is number six. Okay? And then we have a number of crossings, right? And each crossing, let's pick a typical one, I don't know. Let's pick a crossing. For each crossing, well, it will be surrounded by four numbers. And one of these number, or in one of those four strand edges that enter into it, is the incoming lower edge. I mean, so I choose to start enumerating the edges around it from the incoming lower edge and then going counterclockwise. So in general, if I have numbers I, J, K, L over here, I will call this the crossing which involves I, J, K, and L. So overall, the knot over here will be represented by, so let's see, the incoming entering strand over here is this one, if I start from 1, I'll see 1, 5, 2, 4. So the first crossing is crossing 1, 5, 2, 4. The second crossing is this one. So it actually doesn't matter which one I take to be the second, but it will be 5, 3, 6, 2. So I have a crossing between 5, 3, 6, and 2. And finally, I have a crossing between... So the incoming one is this one, and I have 3, 1, 4, 6. 3, 1, 4, 6. Now, you can ask yourself, well, is this sufficient information to recover the knot? The answer is, well, yes, it is, but it's irrelevant for what I want to do. What I want to do is to show you that from this information I can compute the Jones polynomial. Okay? So whether or not you can recover the knot from it is a different story. The point was that it's an amount of... So given a complicated knot, the amount of time writing this information is something that I could do by hand relatively quickly. Even if the even if the knot had 100 crossings, it would just mean writing the numbers between 1 and 200 and then writing 100 X's. It's not such a complicated thing, right? But then the computer could do the rest from this information. Okay? And now let me show you how the computer does the rest from this information. So first of all, let me enter this knot into the computer. So I'll just call the knot K, and K will be the product of four crossings. Can you all see this, or should I make it larger? Okay, so the first crossing is 1524. So 1524. The second crossing is 5362. 5362. Please correct me if I do something wrong. And the last crossing is 3146. 3146. Enter it. Okay, this is the crossing. Next thing that I want to do is to replace every crossing by the two ways of smoothing it. So what are the two ways of smoothing it? Well, this goes to A times the zero smoothing plus B times the one smoothing. So I need to introduce a new bit of notation. The new bit of notation will be a point, and a point indicates, so if these are called I, J, K, and L, so I will label these the same way, so I, J, K, and L, a point will indicate that I is connected to L. So the notation for this smoothing will be P, I, L times P, J, K. And then the notation for this smoothing will be PIJ, PIJ times PKL. Okay? So, I need to take my knot K and apply to it the substitution XIJKL. So don't worry about the syntax. I've put the underscore here for some, you know, internal reason of the language that I work with. Okay? Don't worry about it. What I want to do is to replace it by A times P I L P J K plus B times IJ, KL. Okay? Now, here's the result of the replacement. Every crossing was replaced by a combination. Okay? But, there are two things that I did wrong. First of all, I want to save the result of that for the continuation of the computation, right? So I should have put it into some temporary variable. Maybe I should call this T1, just temporary variable number one. This is the result of that. And the second thing is that I actually want to expand this, right? I want to convert it from a product of sum to a big, big, big sum of products, right? That's exactly how the evaluation works. So I'll put the command expand around it. And now I have 8 terms. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 terms. And each one represents a smoothing with coefficients that are A's and B's. Okay? Unfortunately, it represents a smoothing in a funny way. So, for example, what is written here is a path from 1 to 4, followed by a path from 4 to 6, followed by a path from 6 to 3, followed by a path from 3 to 1. Right? And I want to simplify it. So, I'll take T1, well, I'll set T2 to be T1, to which I have applied the substitution, in fact, to which I repeatedly apply the substitution. So let's see, whenever I see a PIJ followed by a JK, right, if I have a path from I to J and then a path from J to K, then that's the same as a path from I to K. Okay? Oops, sorry, syntax error, I forgot to close the bracket. And now, well, all the paths reduced to either closed loops around the point, or two points connected by, well, 5 goes to 2 and then 2 goes to 4, 5. It is interpreted as p squared rather than a single path, okay? So the next thing I want to do is to set T3 to be T2 subject to the rules. First of all, any place you see a I, this is really a loop. So replace it by a D. And also, every place you see a PIJ squared, replace it by a D. So every place you see a PIJ to the power 2, replace it by a D. And this, I believe, is the same as that. Is it? It better be. Don't check. It should be the same. That's not yet the Jones polynomial. The Jones polynomial will be T, well, not yet even that. The bracket, the Kaufman bracket, will be T3, to which I apply the rules. Well, B is really 1 over A, right? And D is really negative A squared, negative 1 over A squared. And actually, you know, I may as well divide by D here, okay? So let's take T3 divided by D. And finally, at the end, I may as well simplify, just to get the simplest possible result, okay? Here it is. That's actually not yet the Jones polynomial, because I failed to multiply by a power of a cubed, and I failed to do the last substitution. I'll continue failing. It's fine. Okay? Let's compare it with what the computer knows in advance. Okay? So let's load a package called not theory. It's been loaded. Oops, I've used the symbol that I shouldn't have used. You know what? Let me quit the program and restart it. And okay, I've loaded an existing program, and let's compute the Jones polynomial of the trefoil knot. So it's the so-called first knot with 3 crossings. So it's the knot 3-1. The first knot with 3 crossings. And let's evaluate it at the variable q. And, well, the only thing I can tell is that you'll have to check for yourself that under Zille substitutions you get this answer. Okay? Next, just for fun, let's ask the computer to print all knots. Well, really, all knots defaults to all knots between 0 crossings, so this is the unknot, and down to I don't know, 11 crossings, okay? You know what? I may have overdone it. So let's ask it to do all knots with between 0 and 10 crossings. I think this will be a bit less. Okay? So let's call it K's for knots. So this is K's. First of all, what is the length of K's? I promised 250, it is exactly 250. Now let's compute the Jones polynomial of something evaluated at Q and apply it to all the knots. Again, forget the syntax. I'm just computing the Jones polynomial of all of this. I get this large number of polynomials, and it went quite quickly. Okay?
Are those pre-computed?
These were pre-computed. I cheated. but actually, it would go quite quickly even without the pre-computation. These are small enough. Okay? I should have given it a name, So let's call this output J's. This is the set of all Jones polynomial. How many are there? So let's compute the length of J's. Well, of course, 250. But Mathematica has a built-in command called take the union of a set, which really means if it's a single set, if it's two sets, it will be the union. But if it's a single set, it will just remove duplications. So let's take the union of all the J's and now compute the length. So how many different values the Jones polynomial gets on the first 250 knots? And the answer is 243. So, well, it's not perfect, but it's pretty good. It's definitely better than coloring. And let's stop here and continue next Monday. I should say this Mathematica notebook will be under my notebook part of the website. Okay? So